And if you love him that much, love him enough to make sure he's buckled up and in the back seat. Find out more at nhtsa.gov/the right seat. Brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration and the Ad Council.
The back seat. Check the back seat.
Gets in your head, right? Good, because every year dozens of children are forgotten in the back seat. Cars get hot fast and can be deadly. So get it in your head. A message from NHTSA and the Ad Council.
This is Steve Earle, and you're listening to KPFT Houston Pacifica Radio for Peace.
And now, Houston's only primetime radio program dedicated to news and concerns of the lesbi, gay, and transgender community. This is Queer Voices. This week, Deborah Moncrief Bell has a conversation with Paul Whitehead about his drag queen alter ego.
There's four of them, and they came up to me and they're saying, who's going to go first? You know, all that kind of thing. And I realized that all I had going for me was the element of surprise. So when one of them touched me, I spun round and I whipped my wig off, and in a very, very, very male voice, I said, "You don't know what you're screwing with." And I ran through them, got in my car and locked the doors.
Brian Levinka talked with Representative Al Green about his support for the LGBT community. And Brett Cullum discusses queer theater with producer Tice Green.
I just knew straight away that I just wanted to make things happen. And in order to make things happen, I had to learn how to do them, and then I had to go out and do them. And that sounds really simplistic, but that's really how I learned to be good at business. Everything that I learned from just researching it myself.
We also have Brett's calendar of community events for the month of July. Queer Voices starts now.
This is Deborah Moncrief Bell, and I have the pleasure of talking with Paul Whitehead. Paul is, he's not just Paul. He's also Tricia. And there's a documentary that's going to be out July 9th on Apple TV and other places called Paul and Tricia, The Art of Fluidity. His greatest creation was herself. Paul, everyone's going to enjoy very much your British accent, but I understand you're in the States now. And at the age of 77, you have had quite an experience of being two artists living in one gender fluid body. Your history is as a painter, graphic designer, writer, and musician. You've worked at the art director for Time Out and with John Lennon. You have created album covers for music icons like Genesis and Creedence Clearwater Revival. How did you get started in performing as Tricia Van Cleef?
It was kind of a natural progression. I grew up, and my formative years were in the 60s, late 60s. So as you probably know, those days, gender was not a big issue. You know, we had characters like David Bowie and Mick Jagger that went backwards and forwards between their genders. So I kind of followed suit, and it wasn't a big deal to me. I was quite comfortable growing my hair, wearing earrings, wearing kind of feminine clothes, you know, frilly clothes, even shoes with heels. And it wasn't at all considered unusual. It was like, that's what's going on. We wear eye makeup and maybe a little bit of lipstick, whatever. So that was my beginning of it, and I was comfortable with that. And then as I went on, I felt I want to manifest this character more than just playing. I wanted to see how she operates in the world and what is her personality, what are her interests, are they different to Paul's interests? So I started to dabble. I was married, and I started to dabble with cross-dressing and wearing some of my wife's clothes in private, not going out in public. And I guess I gradually got braver and braver. And of course, eventually the question occurred to me, what kind of art does she make? Does she make different art to the art that Paul's makes? And it turned out that she did, very, very different. And it's like two sides of one coin. Paul is very sort of intellectual. His work is about ideas, expressing ideas, showing ideas, a lot of them surrealistic, highly finished, very realistic, able to see what it's all about. Tricia is completely spontaneous. She doesn't go into creating anything with an idea in mind, just see what happens. It's very playful, which I find is kind of a relief. It's a relief to all the technical perspective and working out of the Paul images.
Did you receive any backlash from the people that you were associated with?
I've been doing a series of one-man, one-woman shows. The first one was in, I think it was 2008. And I remember very clearly going through my mailing list, trying to decide who to invite. Because you go through your list and you go, do I invite Bob? Oh, no, Bob wouldn't understand at all, right? And it was a real thing for me. I went through it for like a week. And eventually I asked one of my other transgender friends, what do you think I should do? And she said, invite everybody. So I said, really? That's kind of brave. She said, well, I can tell you from personal experience, you won't regret it. And anybody that disowns you or doesn't want anything to do with you because of that, they weren't your friends to begin with. And you'll find also that you will gather a new circle of friends. And that's exactly what happened. I had a few friends, male friends, that were kind of like, what's going on here, Paulie? Are you a fag or something? Or what's going on? You know? And I'd say, no. And they'd disown me. They'd go away. They wouldn't talk to me for maybe a year or two. But gradually they'd come back and they'd say to me, you know, we were a bit shocked at first and it really shook us. But we realized because it's you, there's maybe something more interesting going on. So tell us all about it. So then I'd explain, and they wouldn't become converts, but they would be more tolerant. And so I didn't really lose any friends. It was interesting. And of course, I gained lots of new ones.
In the UK, they seem to have a different attitude towards drag than what we have going on here in the States. I'm thinking of Paul O'Grady in his character Lily Savage, and he became quite renowned, was a TV presenter and well-respected. Do you find that to be the case?
Yeah, there's a much, much longer historical tradition in England of that, particularly in the old music halls, you know, in late 1890s, turn of the century. It was a huge thing. And historically, there was a lot of characters in English history that were well-known, you know, transgender going backwards and forwards. There was princes and kings and so on, right? So I think that's where that comes from. In Europe as a whole, they're a lot more tolerant. It's not regarded as like a strange thing. It's like, yeah, well, people do that. And there's been a lot of writers, a lot of creative people have had dual identities. George Sands comes to mind, right?
Susan Eddy Izzard.
Yeah.
Quentin Chris, of course, he went through a history of being threatened as far as his career. He was a civil servant. And in fact, you can watch the film. It's Quentin Chris, the Naked Civil Servant.
In the theater, right, in Elizabethan times, there weren't actresses. All the parts were played by men. And I think that goes back to the Greek times. So that's also a long time tradition, you know, men playing women's parts. So it's not a new thing. In fact, I'm kind of surprised that it's as weird as it is by society. You know, it's like, catch up, guys. Come on.
How did this documentary come about?
Just before COVID, I was doing a series of pop-up art shows, one-man, one-woman shows, where we would take a retail space that was vacant for 2 or 3 weeks, and we'd have an art show, have an opening, the art show, then we'd have a closing reception and move on. It was like the circus. I figured that what we needed was like a 20, 25-minute film that would play in the gallery on a loop that would tell you a little bit about my history, what the idea was behind the show and so on, right? My friend Adam Fisk, was my partner at the time, and he said, yeah, we need to find a filmmaker. So his girlfriend, Fia Pereira, was a filmmaker. So he said, well, you guys get together and let's do this 20, 25-minute film. After a couple of interview sessions, it became quickly apparent that it was much more than a 25-minute film. So she went to Adam and she said, I think we've got a whole film here, you know. So I said, keep shooting, just keep going. So we established this thing where we'd meet once a week. She'd come and interview me, and it went on, but we got into everything. We covered everything. But I felt very comfortable with her. She didn't come to it like a lot of people come to interviews with preconceived notions. She was very open and willing to hear and listen to what I had to say and what my life was all about. And so I felt very, very comfortable kind of unfolding. You know, this is the way I live. This is what I do. This is why I do it. She also said to me, she realized that I wasn't sort of confrontational. I wasn't in your face about it. I was very low key. This is what's going on. I'm not afraid to answer any questions you ask me. Whatever you ask me, I'll answer it. And so a great relationship developed, and I felt very comfortable.
The documentary combines interviews, graphics, animation, and lots of art imagery, which makes sense coming from your background. And you also reenact scenes from your and Trisha's lives past. So this is kind of a look back. I mean, you've documented your life.
Well, as she asked me questions, there'd be sometimes she'd say to me, in the course of doing this, have you ever had any danger? Have you ever been in danger? I say, oh, yeah. And I'd tell her a story. You know, one night I was at an ATM machine midnight, and it was one of those machines around the back of the bank, not on the main street. And I was getting my money, and this car pulled in with a bunch of guys in it, and they were going to rape me. They thought I was a woman from behind. There was four of them, and they came up to me, and they're saying, oh, who's going to go first? You know, all that kind of. And I realized that all I had going for me was the element of surprise. So when one of them touched me, I spun around and I whipped my wig off. And in a very, very, very male voice, I said, you don't know what you're screwing with. And I ran through them, got in my car and locked the doors. So stuff that was reenacted, we reenacted. So it was a good way to show, you know, little scenes that happened in my life. I mean, I've not had a boring life by any means.
Does Trisha sound different than Paul?
No.
You don't change your voice?
No. A lot of my friends do that. They become this, and they, oh, hello, you know, my name's so. No, I don't have any confusion about who I am. I just say it's basically you're wearing a different outer garment. You know, it's like a cape with a different decoration on it. And I function in the world pretty much the same. My values don't change. My ethics don't change, you know. And yeah, I talk the way I talk now.
What was surprising to you when Trisha manifest? Was there something that really surprised you?
Yeah, I think the biggest surprise was the way people treat you. People treat you completely different as a feminine manifestation of yourself. In a lot of ways, kind of condescending. And of course, you're a sex object, right? So it was kind of weird. It was the same person, but just with a little makeup and different clothes. Their attitude and the way they treated me was so different. I found it very strange. But I'd say to people, hey, hold on a minute, it's me. You know, why are you acting like that or talking to me like that? It's me. I'm no different. That was probably my biggest surprise, yeah.
That's very telling, isn't it?
And I'll tell you something. I would not like to be a woman 100%. I take my hat off to you ladies, what you go through. I really do. It's not a pleasant experience sometimes.
What has been your greatest joy from all of this?
I think the realization that this film might be able to help somebody out there. If there's somebody going through a struggle with their gender and they're in a social situation that's not friendly, maybe my film here can give them hope, maybe give them some idea of how to work their way through it, maybe ask for advice, you know, because I've got lots of experience. I've got lots of experiences and lots of sort of reminiscences to share with people that might make their path easier. And I think already we've been doing film festivals and doing Q&A sessions at the end. I've already had some really profound questions at these sessions. You know, people have come out to me. There's a couple of mothers have said to me, thank you so much for this film. You've helped me to really understand my son. Or, you know, so I think that's my biggest joy. Maybe we've helped somebody.
This is Deborah Moncrief Bell, and we're talking to Paul Whitehead and also Trisha Van Cleef. Because Paul and Trisha are the same person in one gender-fluid body. And the documentary is Paul and Trisha, The Art of Fluidity. And it's going to be available on Apple TV starting July 9th.
Coming up next on Queer Voices, Representative Al Green talking about his career in Congress and support for the LGBT community. Tice Green, no relation, talks about producing theater, and Brett Cullum's calendar of community events for July.
Hi, this is Brett Cullum, and I've got your community calendar for July. If you're looking for theater this month, we've got a lot to pick from. Playing at the Match Complex right now is Tamaree's Texas Toast. This is Tamaree Cooper's annual show with the Catastrophic Theater. A lot of great musical comedy sketches and a lot of queer material in that one. It will run through August 3rd at the Match. Disney's The Lion King from Broadway Across America. This is one of the big ones we've been waiting for. A great Broadway show over 20 years old with the score from Elton John. It opens on July 11th and runs through August 4th. If you're in the mood for something a little bit more spooky and creepy, Main Street Theater has you covered in Rice Village. They will be presenting The Woman in Black. It opens July 13th, runs through August 11th. On the Verge Theater presents Dracula, a comedy of terrors. This is a show that was recently on Broadway. It will open on July 18th and go through August 11th. It's got a lot of gender bending and specific comedy. It's a great show. The Alley Theater presents their Summer Chiller. It's going to be Agatha Christie's classic, and then there were none. The Act Out performance date had not been announced at this recording, but it is playing through August 23rd. It opens on July 19th, so definitely plan on seeing And Then There Were None at the Alley. If you want to support a new group, Houston Broadway Theater presents their first production, Next to Normal. Now, this is a rock opera that talks about bipolar issues and examines a family going through struggles with psychiatric issues. It is going to be running only for one weekend. It opens on July 26th at the Hobby Center. Again, that is Next to Normal from Houston Broadway Theater. If you're looking for a fun event that is a fundraiser, Trans Men Empowerment Area will be held at the Montrose Center on July 6th. It will start at 6:30 and will run until 10 o'clock. It's going to be an exciting evening of Mexican Lotteria. You can enjoy the fun and community spirit while supporting a great cause. You get two Lotteria cards for just $25, and all proceeds benefit the Trans Men Empowerment Gender Affirming Surgery Fundraiser. In other transgender events, there is the Trans and Gender Queer, or TGQH, Social, which will be held Tuesday, July 9th at the King's Beer House on TC Jester at 7 p.m. This is a new event location for them, and they're inviting all transgender, genderqueer people, allies, and even family that are supportive. They're all invited. Don't forget that July 14th is International Non-Binary People's Day. So definitely be prepared to celebrate the contributions of non-binary people and focus on the issues that are affecting them. Thank you so much. That's been your calendar for July. I will be back in August to tell you more about what's happening in the community.
This is Brian Levinka, and today I'm interviewing Congressman Al Green of the 9th Congressional District of Texas. Welcome to the show.
Well, thank you very much for having me. I'm looking forward to the program, and I thank your audience for participating by listening.
Congressman, who are you and how did you get into office?
Well, I'm the son of Alec Green and Picola Green. I was born in Louisiana, New Orleans, at Charity Hospital, grew up in Florida, attended high school at Florida, various high schools in Florida. My family moved about a bit. And I am a person who arrived here in Houston, Texas, because of a fortuitous circumstance. I was traveling across the campus at Florida A&M University, where I was a student, and I bumped into a man who was a counselor. His name was Cunningham. He asked me to go over and talk to a man who was interviewing people for law school. I rejected the offer initially, but he cajoled me and convinced me that I should go and talk to this man. I told Mr. Cunningham that I was at the time minding everybody's business but my own. I was running for president of the student body, but I did comply. I went over. This man's name was Jethro Curry. He talked to me for about 30 minutes to an hour. Don't know the exact amount of time. And after the conversation, he offered me a scholarship, a Ford Foundation grant was what it actually was, and an opportunity to come to law school at Thurgood Marshall School of Law without an undergraduate degree and pursue a legal education. I was fortunate enough to be assigned to Frances Farenthal, better known as Sissy Farenthal, as her student assistant. I carried her books, I picked up at the airport, did a lot of things for her. And she, of course, ran for governor and got introduced to Texas politics. Met a good friend, Mickey Leland. I had an opportunity to travel to various places with him, Cuba, among the many places we went to, and Africa. I had some sense of what Congress was all about, became the judge of a justice court, and served there for more than a quarter of a century. Then the opportunity availed itself to come to Congress, not for the 18th Congressional District. I went to bed one night in the 9th Congressional District and awakened the next morning in the 18th Congressional District. I went to bed and awakened the next morning in the 9th Congressional District. And it just so happens that the Justice Court that I had the honor of presiding over had lines that were similar to the lines in the 9th Congressional District. I ran, and I'm in Congress. I've been here since 2005. I've enjoyed every minute of it. And if they cut the salary to zero and allowed me to continue to work, I would.
Tell me about the 9th Congressional District. Where is it and what are the borders?
Well, it's probably easier to tell you about it in terms of areas of town. It includes the medical center. It includes South Park, Hiram Clark, a little bit of A-Leaf now. It includes Fort Bend County's Missouri City. It includes Pearland, which is in Brazoria County. And it also includes Stafford, which is in Fort Bend County. So it's a pretty diverse district. It contains a diverse population in the 18th, the 9th Congressional District. I have the 18th on my mind this morning. Let's just pause for a moment and say that I'm prayerful for my dear friend and colleague, Sheila Jackson Lee, who is the congressperson for the 18th Congressional District. I'm going to assume that those snafus were some sort of reminder that I should let people know that we should keep her in our prayer. She's been a real champion. But as I was about to say, the 9th Congressional District has the ballot printed in four languages, English, Spanish, Vietnamese, and Chinese. It is one of the most diverse districts in the country, and I'm honored to serve the population.
Can you talk about your work with the LGBT community in Congress?
This work is something that I've enjoyed in and out of Congress. I am an ally of the community, and I'm proud to be an ally of the community. I'm an ally for many, many reasons, and among the multiplicity of reasons is the fact that someone was an ally for African Americans. Someone was an ally for me. And I think it's a debt that we all owe to each other to be of service to each other, because no one does anything alone and everybody receives the benefit of someone else's labor, someone else's love, someone else's caring for us. So I'm proud of what I've done in Congress, but I'm proud of what I've done out of Congress and just standing up for the causes related to invidious discrimination as they relate to the LGBT plus community. So in Congress, I'm a proud sponsor of the original LGBTQIA Pride Month resolution. This is where we chronicle a lot of the history of what's happened to the LGBTQ plus community. And one of the things that we did with that resolution was to incorporate the Honorable Barney Frank as an honorary co-sponsor of the resolution. For those who may not know, he was a person who was a member of the LGBTQ plus community who actually acknowledged his membership and was the chairperson of the Financial Services Full Committee, a brilliant, scholarly person who was a mentor to many of us and gave us the opportunity to understand more of what we ordinarily would have understood and to do more than what we would ordinarily not been able to do as members of the Financial Services Committee. So I'm proud to have him as a co-sponsor. As I indicated, the resolution that gives us some sense of important dates and events. Stonewall is, of course, mentioned. I don't know how you can have a Pride Month resolution and not mention Stonewall. But there are other dates. We've mentioned the fact that here in Houston, Anise Parker was the first person from the community. And when I say the community in the future, please know that I'm talking about the what I call the Pride community, the LGBT plus community. She was the first person to become mayor who was a member of the community. Proud to acknowledge this and many other circumstances. I'm also a person who has voted for the Equality Act. Mr. Cicilline was a person who worked tirelessly to get the Equality Act passed. It was H.R. 5. And it prohibits discrimination based upon sex, sexual orientation, gender identity. And it does so as it relates to public accommodations. We had to do a similar thing for African Americans in this country. And I think that invidious discrimination against any group of people is abhorrent. And we all ought to do all that we can to eliminate it. So I'm a proud co-sponsor of H.R. 5, which was not voted on in this Congress, but in a prior Congress. My hope is that it would be taken up in this Congress, but that's hope. The reality is that it is not likely to be brought to the floor for a vote in this Congress. I'm also proud to have sponsored H.R. 166, which is the Fair Lending for All Act. And this would protect people with a minority status, but it includes, where we've not previously included, the LGBTQ plus community. And it includes them, this community, as it relates to financing homes, acquiring loans. Many people are not aware of the fact that if persons from the community should go in to apply for a loan, and they both happen to be males, and they both happen to give some expression of affinity, affection for each other, that their loan might be impacted by doing what other people do on a normal day without being in any way noticed. Well, we think that that kind of discrimination ought not be tolerated. And we have a bill that would penalize persons for doing such a thing. I'm proud of my work in general in Congress as it relates to invidious discrimination. I believe that invidious discrimination is something that we should address in a much broader sense than we currently address it. We address it now on a case-by-case basis, almost, in terms of a community, community-by-community basis. I believe that we ought to have a Department of Reconciliation, a Department of Reconciliation with a Secretary of Reconciliation. We have a Department of Labor with a person who reports directly to the president, the Secretary of Labor, a Department of Commerce. I think we should have a Department of Reconciliation, Secretary of Reconciliation, reporting directly to the President of the United States. And I believe that this department ought to be financed with monies that are indexed to the defense budget. Why? Because we will always have a defense.